Hello. I'm Anna. I'm a journalist, and I'm occupied since quite a lot of time with digital migration control. I sort of remember last time, 2019, in Leipzig at the Congress. I talked a lot on the use of technology within the Federal Office for Migration and Refugees, but today I don't want to talk about this authority so much, but rather about how technology is being used to control refugees and migration. It's not just about surveillance or looking into devices. It's about a lot of technologies, and I wish I could stop being here and don't need to be here, but a lot happened since 2019, so I have to. If you remember 2019, there was not only no pandemic yet, we also still had a big coalition between the CDU and SPD parties. So we have the Horst Seehofer, the Minister of the Interior, who celebrated that 69 people were deported to Afghanistan on his 69th birthday. So we were in a time where we rather got used to migration policies and asylum policies getting more and more regressive, because we thought, oh, we have the conservatives in the Ministry of the Interior, we have a minister calling migration the mother of all problems. And then we got the self-declared coalition of progress, and we thought, wow, maybe things can get different now. We thought this about a lot of things, a lot of digital things. But instead, by now, we have a huge problem with nationalism, with racism, we have a problem with right-wing extremists, with the government who wants to combat right-wing extremism by pushing the same narratives. We have 68% in German polls saying no more refugees. 63% are asking for more deportations. We have the Minister of the Interior, Faeser, who is saying the same thing as a predecessor, didn't change most of the staff in the ministry, and especially the FDP party is doing the same in the government. The Green Party have given up their principles for joining the government. And they they're having a party congress where people are shouting, nobody is illegal, while others say a party congress of a party within government is not a game. So what is all of this about? It's about humans. It's about humans on flight, reaching Germany on very different reasons. There are very different reasons about why people are escaping. They are escaping war, terrorism, repression, people escaping because of the climate crisis. The routes change how people can reach Germany. The technologies change. But one thing that doesn't change is that borders are not only physical anymore. Nowadays, a border is not just a wall, but also digitally we have high-tech borders. We have technologies trying to control the movements of refugees. We have technologies trying to predict the movements of refugees, and technologies trying to suppress movements of refugees. So they are trying to make the refugee transparent to suppress his movements. No matter if we're talking about the destination countries that they are headed to or the countries they are going through on the way. Now the government is talking about removing pull factors, so-called incentives for people coming to Germany, but the development that we see is that migration and also many other areas of life are
Menschen umgeht, die in der schweren Straftat verübt haben.
are being... So we have a lot of different technical solutions being taken out for this. We have surveillance in the big to combat so-called migration streams, finding out how people are moving in masses. So we have drone surveillance, but also social media monitoring. But then we have individual surveillance and control. It's about fingerprints. It's about reading the content of devices. It's about digital hobbles that which are being used in the UK. It's about using so-called AI to make all these systems more and more inscrutable. So I'd like to take a closer look into this, but it's a bit difficult to give any overview in this in less than 24 hours. But the systems I want to show you now is showing the different categories of this from the individual affection to systems. So first of all, I want to talk about the digital payment cards, which have been a lot in the media in Germany in the past weeks. The conference of the ministries of the interior wants that refugees who are within the process of applying for asylum should get no cash, but only cards to pay for what they need every day. So what do they get? They live in they live in a refugee home where they get a bed and a room, and of course they get some money for the basic means. It's up to 410 euros per month, so not a lot. So what is this payment card system about? The head of the FDP party is saying we want to weaken a pull factor for illegal migration to Germany with that. So let's have a look. What are pull factors? Often in the political discussion we have these push and pull factors. So pull factors are reasons for flight. So is there war in the country? Are people persecuted in the country? We have socioeconomic reasons. Is there poverty in this country? We have ecological reasons. For example, many countries, the basic needs of life won't exist anymore soon due to ecological reasons. So the pull factors are factors existing in a certain country which may motivate people to go there, like for example social benefits. The thing that gets me enraged is that since the 1980s the idea of push and pull factors is outdated, because we have seen that the reasons for migrations are so complex and there's so many reasons for it, that the simplified system, that there is something pushing the people away from somewhere and something pulling the people to somewhere, is simply not applicable anymore. Because
and of course there are people who migrate for reasons out of their control. There are people who migrate to a different country and leave their partners behind. But of course this narrative of the pull factor, cash, pull factor, social benefits, supposedly pull factors, is being brought to the forefront again and again. And it's interesting because in 2020, the Federal Ministry of the Interior replied to an idea from Bavaria to introduce payment cards, and said that the majority of international research on the effects of social benefits on migration decisions finds no or only minimal influences of this kind. So this the ministry that now wants to bring up the idea of payment cards again, originally originally, only 3 years ago, stated that it doesn't make much of a difference if people receive cash or only a very restrictive payment card. It doesn't really have any influence on their decision to migrate to Germany, and these people probably even don't know that before they migrate. So the question is, what is this about? It's about control. It's about what people consume, because these cards often come with restrictions. You can't use them to buy alcohol or tobacco. You can't use them to gamble. So all the things that are seen as inadequate or socially undesirable aren't possible, which limits people's personal decisions of consumptions. Another thing you can control is money transfer. You want to prevent people from sending money back home to support their relatives, or you want to prevent people from withdrawing money as cash that they would then be able to send to others if they're still able to save any of the very little money they receive. And many of these cards limit people's radius of movement, because they can only be used within a certain radius of the place where you are, the place where you live. So you can only use them within a radius of X kilometers around where you're supposed to have your life. And if you try to use it elsewhere, the card no longer works. And I looked at the website of this one of these card vendors, and they have a very cynical reason for why the radius can be limited. And they write that this allows you to strengthen your local economy in a targeted manner. So this gives you an instrument of control that you can use as an economic measure for small countryside shops. And very usefully, this company also offers a service to municipalities and districts that want to use these cards, because they help you with the tendering process and allow you to simplify the tendering process by 90%. And this idea isn't new at all. When you look at where this comes from, you have to go back all the way to the 90s. This model was tested in the 90s in Berlin, and it was a smashing defeat. There were huge problems. One of them was that none of the low-cost shops accepted these cards, so refugees didn't have a lot of money, and they could only spend that money in shops that were comparatively expensive. So you have 70 shops that would accept these cards, where you can buy the stuff you need, and besides the fact that they had to go to expensive shops, they often had to travel quite far to get to these shops. There were huge problems with the acceptance of these cards, even in the shops that supposedly accepted them, which led to further stigmatization, because cards weren't accepted, or people had to go through a special process to get them accepted. And there were problems because these cards were supposedly only be able to be used to the basic necessities of life. No tobacco, no alcohol, no tickets for travel, no attorneys. And there were accounts of people who had to discuss with shop staff whether or not pots and pans were parts of the daily necessities of life. And the administrative effort was really large, and all the costs that were associated with the introduction of these cards were no longer worthwhile. And then this model was abandoned in 2003, and now, 20 years later, we suddenly reintroduce it. Another thing that's important in this debate about these payment cards is that not all of them are created equal. There was a project in Hanover where the so-called social card was introduced in November, but it's not about limitation, it's about simplifying administration and giving people an automatically recharging account. And this card actually allows you to withdraw the money as cash, and it doesn't restrict people because they can go to a cash machine, withdraw 100 euros and use them to do whatever they want, and especially wherever they want. The counter example is Greiz, which is a district in Thuringia. The card can no longer be used in Gera, and it even requires people who return deposits for plastic bottles to only send the money back to the card. So it tries to take away all possibilities from people to access larger amounts of money than these 100 euros of cash they get each month. I have no idea how this is supposed to be enforced, but apparently they are trying to do it, and the same thing is true for returns. So you can't buy something with this card, return it, and then get cash in return. It all has to go through this transfer, the electronic transfer, and electronic transfers to abroad are impossible as well. And this unified system is supposed to be rolled out and by January, or is supposed to be planned by January 2024. And I think it's very important that we look very closely at what's being planned. We don't know all the details, all the restrictions. We don't know what the privacy questions are going to be, but it's a topic that's going to be very acute very soon when there are federal standards. While some people are working on federal standards, Bavaria has gone ahead and created an invitation to tender where they are creating a 17 million euro system for the 380,000 refugees in Bavaria.
So I will continue now with a very different topic now, which is not about control of individual life, but it's rather a data collection about them, and it's a long-term topic since the 1950s, but there is simply too little audience on this. It's the Central Registry of Foreigners. It's one of the biggest data collections in Germany. It has been changed more than 40 times since 1953. Or you can also change it as enlarging it in this case. It contains more than 26 million of personal data records. It's different how many data are being saved in the registry to each individual person. So there's more data being saved when a person comes to Germany as a refugee than if you come to Germany as a different status, for example, with a visa. So the number of data being saved is different for each status, and it affects any person who is within Germany for a longer time without German citizenship. It also still includes persons who have left Germany. They're not immediately deleted from the system. Also, Seehofer, the Minister of the Interior, before widened the system and One of the things he said about this is we made it silently because it's so complicated and this doesn't get people in rage. So
die in Deutschland bleiben dürfen, gelingen kann. Das heißt, wir müssen möglichst viele Menschen wegschicken, damit irgendwie ein paar Menschen integriert werden können.
So you need to make laws complicated, so not many people take note.
Gesetz, dem zweiten Datenaustauschverbesserungsgesetz,
and that's what he said in the context of the second law to improve the exchange of data, which was supposed to give authorities faster access to personal identification numbers of any person so they can find them faster in their system. So let's have a look on which data are in this central registry of foreigners. We have a big load of data in the system. That's the appendix to the law on this registry. You don't need to read this in detail. It's but we have a lot of data categories. We have the group of persons each data set applies to, and then they collect data like addresses, but also, for example, health information such as vaccinations. We have informations to concerning the promotion of so-called voluntary departure. We have integration courses, and since the recent widening of the system, we also partially have entire documents of asylum decisions and court decisions in asylum processes. The most recent widening of the system, which is currently being discussed at the Bundestag, is the law to change the rules on exchanging data in social law and foreigners law. So, for example, persons getting social benefits or not getting them anymore since recently, information about these people will be forwarded more easily to other authorities. So the most blatant thing is that not more and more data are being collected, but more and more authorities now can access this system. There is the automated access and there is singular access to single data sets. So we have 16,000 authorities in Germany having automatic access to any information on in the registry. For example, the job centers, youth administration offices, soon also courts, and the prison administrations will get access to the system. Of course, also police and secret services, so, and a lot of other authorities. So any authority which may have to do with foreigners. Currently, we have 3,956 authorities having automatic access to the system, and in future, also local health offices, local youth authorities, and courts shall get automatic access to the system and not just manual. And these automatic systems are a huge problem. So I asked with the Federal Office for Migration and Refugees how many data protection breaches have been with the system because we know a lot about scandals where police databases are being abused, for example, right-wing policemen trying to out leftist persons, and the Federal Office for Migration and Refugees has said that within 1.8% of the samples they took, and they take 2,400 samples of data accesses per quarter year, and with 1.8% there has been an abuse of the system. So in 0.3% of the cases they had data protection breaches which had to be reported, and they have to be reported if they contain risks for freedom or safety of a person. It doesn't sound that much, like 1.8% and 0.3%. But if you consider how often this system is being accessed, then you know that this is a lot. So the NGO GFF has found out that only 1 of 14,000 data accesses is being checked or evaluated afterwards. So you can estimate how many abuses of the systems are taking place. For example, a person from Egypt wrote a Facebook post. About how certain social benefits work in Germany, and this person got a PN on Facebook which contained data taken from the central registry of refugees, the central registry of foreigners, and in this message he was threatened to that he will get problems if he doesn't stop posting this. And later they found out that someone from the Federal Agency of Work did access those data. So
Nancy Faeser, the federal minister of the Interior, says we need clear rules so that Germany can be a solidaric country. With these clear rules include rules on who has to leave Germany quickly. The so-called Repatriation Improvement Act includes a lot of paragraphs on smartphone analysis, the analysis of smartphones of refugees. It's a topic that I've been working on basically ever since it existed, and in 2019 we conducted a study together with another NGO, and they eventually sued against this practice. There were lawsuits. It took a long time, but eventually there was a success. The Federal Administrative Court said that this practice of analyzing the phones of refugees is completely inadmissible. It's illegal, and you have to stop what you're doing. We were very happy with that. A core part of this ruling was that less invasive means have to be tried first to verify that people come from the countries they say they come from. There are often other ways of doing that than analyzing a phone. For example, marriage certificates. So the court said that these would have to be tried before analyzing the phone. And other authorities have stopped using these means because they weren't very effective. But then we got the reply from the federal government, or the federal government, and Nancy Faeser responded to this ruling, and they said that we're going to extend this, but write into it that we now take into account the ruling, and they say that we're now releasing them for analysis later, but we want to read them initially. And you pretend that the intrusion of the basic rights happens only very late, only in the moment where the data is being analyzed. But of course, these laws are being violated as soon as the data is being pulled, as soon as the person has to hand over the phone. And a side effect is that the data from the mobile phones has to be stored a lot longer because the analysis happened so late. But that's not the only change that's being planned. The Federal Ministry of the Interior also wants to make sure that not only phones are being searched, but also external data clouds, because those have become so important to our lives, and so we want to access the data in your Google Drive, or that hosted at other cloud providers, to get an even more extensive picture of people's lives. And to top it all, they said that we not only do we have the power to check a person's devices directly, we also want the power to access places of living and searching people there, searching the. You could, for example, search a person's room in a detention center, or the common rooms in these refugee centers, to find a mobile phone that might be 2 weeks old, because the last one, where we can check if the person has called Afghanistan in the past 2 weeks. But not only these authorities are interested in that, but also the police. My co-worker and previous intern looked at the text recently, and they found that the federal police looks at the devices of people who cross the border to Germany, and we wondered why they are doing it. And they're not doing it because these people are suspected of any crime, but to get information on trafficking, possible trafficking implications. Because the assumption is that these people send messages to their traffickers, and then you analyze the phone, and the phones are being withheld for, in some cases, months. So these people have already traveled on, and to get access to their devices, you even charge them for the postage to get their phones back after they've been withheld for weeks. That's what the federal police is doing. Other state police forces simply destroy the mobile phones of people at the borders, because they want to destroy evidence of people being mistreated at the border. The next topic I want to talk about, which doesn't seem to be interesting anyone, is all these so-called AI measures against refugees. There's a pretty unknown so-called assistance system for safety notifications, and there is a duty to report refugees to when there is information that might be relevant to security, if the Federal Office for Migration and Refugees finds evidence of that. And they try to automate that and to support it with automation. And this was moved to the productive use in 2020. So you have these protocols of these people when they were questioned and told their life story, and then you run it through an AI system that looks for keywords that suggest that the person has said something that's security relevant, and then in the second step you look at the context of this text, and if that's relevant, then somebody gets an email, looks over it, and if it turns out to be relevant, it is forwarded to the relevant security authority. And the first idea you might have is that the amount of notification to security authorities has increased significantly, but that's not the case. They've actually decreased somewhat in recent years, even more if you look at a longer time frame. It's certainly decreased relative to the number of people who have entered Germany. And why? Is that because people are simply waiting for an email from a system and otherwise don't really look at the data? We don't know. I would explain differently. In 2020, there was an evaluation of the Counterterrorism Act, and it suggested that the Federal Office for the Protection of the Constitution was struggling to deal with the volume. And they said, "Hey, you don't have to DDoS us with potentially relevant things only because a person mentioned a certain terror organization in their interrogation once." And what do they have to notify about then? It depends on the authority. So the police, if they have evidence of that the person might be planning a criminal offense. It's especially interesting if you look at the notification criteria for the secret agencies in Germany, and they said that these are matters in which the federal intelligence services have an interest in gaining knowledge. So, interesting is what's interesting. And if you look at what the intelligence services used to find interesting, I'm always reminded of this lady who said that refugees are being asked about the price of bread in Aleppo. We don't know. I would love to look at these dictionaries that mark relevant passages, but it's this classic non-answer that you get when you ask people what they are doing. This system isn't particularly remarkable for people's privacy. What annoyed me about this system is this one sentence from the federal government where they said that applicants are not informed about the use of AI. That's something that's entirely wrong. So you're using the system that you fed with, trained on 50,000 data sets, and then you don't tell people that what you're telling us is going to be run through some magical AI and it might end up with the intelligence services. That's something that we should keep in mind in the current debate on automated decision making, and it's very wrong. And then we can't avoid the so-called migration forecast. It's a very interesting topic, and the term isn't completely correct because there are different time horizons, on which you can try to make forecasts. There are some forecasts on how many people are going to pass this or that border over the next couple of days, but there are also longer term prognoses where you try to look in a glass ball and try to find out how many people might try to enter Germany within that time frame. That's very interesting for states that use this for planning, and they often use a lot of data to create these forecasts. You'd use mobile phone data, how many people are currently in a given area, how many searches are people doing in Google, you're looking at Google search trends to find out who Googled Germany entry requirements, you're looking at the weather forecast, you're looking at the development of the labor market in certain countries, and it varies a lot depending on the model. I think that these forecasts are interesting because they're a double-edged sword on a moral basis. You could use them to plan capacities. If you expect that a lot of people are going to enter Germany or another country to build reception centers or to distribute humanitarian help, but you can also use them to send Frontex boats into the world and make sure that people are being pushed back and to strengthen than your borders. So we have a technology that's very difficult, and it's very different depending on the context it's being used in. It is being used in a lot of different contexts. One of the earliest models was the so-called Project Jetson. The UNHCR tried to analyze what affects migratory flows in Somalia, and they found that the price of goats was a good predictor of people starting to go on migration. And when they started talking to people, they realized that goats are very valuable to people in the country because they are necessary to survival. They're a resource, and they tend to be well looked after. But when people decide to leave, these goats are being sold because they wouldn't survive the journey. They wouldn't be able to use certain routes or would simply not survive. And that's why goats flood the market. The price drops, and this was seen as a very reliable indicator of migratory movements.
Migrationsvorhersagen gibt es auch bei der Europäischen Asylagentur, die damit schon mal auf die Nase gefallen ist und 2019.
We also have migration predictions with the European Union Agency for Asylum, which already failed badly with this and won the European Union Data Protection Officer. Prohibited to use social media data because they breached data protection regulations. Also Frontex is doing this, getting information and to look where they to which borders they need to send more agents to. And also the Federal Office for Migration and Refugees is working on a project for approximately 16 million of euros to do worldwide migration analysis. The special thing about this system is that they want to do a prognosis looking quite far into the future, which is 6 months, which is quite a lot for such a model. And they may even wish to extend this to 12 months. According to an parliamentary inquiry from last year, it's not finally clear which data they are planning to use for it. Some of They are saying that they are that they want to use freely accessible data for this, but they have also been information that they wish to use secret service information for this. Now let's have a close look at the Common European Asylum Systems, which stands a lot in conflict with the coalition contract of the new government, who wanted to end the illegal refoulements and suffering at the European Union external borders. But if the discussions continue as they go now, everything will get a lot worse. We will have a fiction of non-entry, where persons who are in the EU will be treated as if they have never set foot on the EU ground. Even children of starting at 6 years of age may be imprisoned, and then we have a we have members of the Green Party who are happy that they could at least negotiate school books and a doctor into the new refugee prisons. Then you have Eurodac, a system of the federal used by the German federal police, which has biometric data of up to 6.5 millions of people and is able to process up to 9,500 accesses per day. The new thing is that they want to make easier access for law enforcement bodies to this data. So all of this is quite shitty, and it's part of a big conglomerate where people are changing lives of people for the worse with technology. But of course, I do not want to spread technology pessimism and saying that we need to fight technology itself. But let's have a look on what we need to do to break up all this shit and where we can find technology being able to change our lives for the better and the lives of refugees for the better. So first of all, you can support NGOs or organizations which are fighting against against this. Then we have organizations like Search Wings, who are flying self-built drones to find people in need of help on the Mediterranean Sea. We have SpaceEye, who are using satellite data to find boats which need sea rescue, where many boats coming, and to forward these information. And then we have people who try to document violence and illegal pushbacks at the European Union external borders, and who introduced a platform to take a look of that. That's the Border Violence Monitoring Network. And then there are people like the one you can see tomorrow, who found out things about the so-called Libyan Coast Guard and will be telling us about this. Thank you very much.
Thank you for looking at this, Anna. I think it's very important. We have time for questions. If you have questions, gather in front of the microphones, and we'll start with microphone three. Hi, Anna. Thank you. Thanks a lot for your work. I'm looking for a positive note. Was there any situation where an authority said, we went too far here, that's more than we bargained with? After the change in government, was there any agency that took a step back and that took back some of these measures? I think it's hard to say, because it's going to be difficult to publicly find any any changes of mind by these authorities. This process doesn't tend to be public. In mobile phone analysis and the Berlin the Foreigners Authority, they stopped this practice of computer supported analysis partly because it didn't actually give them a lot of information, partly also because the effort to start a Cellebrite and pretend this is a huge criminal investigation was a bit silly, but I see a trend towards even more data gathering and more technology.
Hi, also thank you for the lecture from me. It was a very good lecture. I asked myself about the Central Registry of Foreigners. You say they have 26 millions of data records, which is quite a lot. Are there any time limits for deleting data? Yes, they exist, but they are different depending on each data set and each person. For example, all data in the system is being deleted if someone gets naturalized as a German citizen, because then they're not a foreigner anymore. There are other time limits so some data has been deleted after 10 years, but I do not know them right now exactly. But it's about certain data categories, and then there are strict time limits to delete them. It's not just about the individual person. But because this registry is such a huge system, sometimes these limits are simply not being held and data is not being deleted, and there have been lots of problems with people being in the system two times because their name has been spelled a little different. Things as this can't be, will always happen when you have a monster system like this. But I would be very happy if people who know that they are being safe, that data about them is being saved in the system because they are not German citizens, send an request for information to their data.
We have a question from the internet. Is this surveillance technology being used on refugees to roll it out on society at large later on? Do you have any indication of that? It depends on the technology. If you take these payment cards as an example, there was a move towards using them on other people who receive social benefits. So you have technology that wouldn't be accepted if it was being used on society at large, and instead you use them on marginalized people and you create precedents. That's one example of a technology. I'm not going to do it I'm not going to run through all the technologies, but yes, you see it on being done on refugees, on football supporters who are actually targeted by quite a lot of surveillance measures, other groups that aren't necessarily part of the majority in society.
Then a question from microphone number one. Yeah, thanks a lot, too. One question about AI, which is being used to get information about people who could pose a security risk or identify them. My thought is that the person with the Federal Office of Migration and Refugees examining the people and deciding about them, that they may be able to say this better than the AI. And do you know what would happen if someone with the Federal Office thinks thinks that this person may pose a security risk, are there any rules that these persons have to report this? Of course, yes, those rules exist. That's a traditional way. I think there's even a section or a group within the federal office for cooperating with law enforcement officers, and they are checking this and forwarding information. No matter whether the information comes first by an email from some weird KI or if the information comes from a person.
Thank you for your talk. Does this digital payment card envision any punishment for people who circumvent these restrictive measures? Well, that would be a great means of practical solidarity. I think that's a great idea. As this hasn't been standardized, I'm not a lawyer. I don't know if, buying stuff for someone else would be punishable. I don't know.
And we have a question from microphone 3. I asked myself, with all these things about payment cards, did something about this get to court already, especially those very restrictive things? Is there something in the pipeline? That's a good question. I don't know. Another question from microphone number 2. Hi. In the end, you had some cool examples of groups trying to support affected people. Do you have an email address where I can contact them so that I can use my skills to support the people? I will upload the files of the presentation, and I will write the email addresses on this.
A question on the Federal Register, the Central Register of Foreigners. What do I need to do to request a data set from that? You send an information request. I can't tell you exactly how, but there are guides on the internet on how you do that. You send it to the authority in charge. I think there are several agencies, there are several federal offices who might be in charge. You have to figure out who it is. Once you've done that, you can find the relevant clauses that other people have written for you before.
Thank you. I've got two questions about the card. First of all, is a technical implementation planned, or should the person at the cash desk decide whether a certain product can be bought with it or can't be bought with it? And the second question is about the deposit money. Should there also the cashiers say, oh, this person looks differently, so I will ask, do you have a digital payment card? And yes, of course, it's totally absurd to say, oh, you can't get your deposit back because you are leaving the decision to the person at the cash desk whether you're German enough to get your deposit money back in cash. A simpler situation it would be if the person is also paying for some other articles with this card and has also handed in some bottles, but then you give the implementation of these rules to some cashiers in supermarkets, so this can't work. And it's still unclear, at least until the end of January, how this will be done in the end. And I can't imagine that this deficit thing will become a real problem in the end, because I believe that not many people who work in the supermarket at the cash desk do not want to play with the system and participate in there.
Danke. Wir haben noch jemanden am Mikrofon.
There's another person at microphone number three.
Dankeschön.
Thank you. 17 million euros in Bavaria alone for 380,000 refugees. You could simply give hand over 44 euros to each of them instead. Bavaria, in its infinite cleverness, have they any future plans? Yes, it's in the tender. There are projected costs for the issuing of these cards. But apparently it's worth it to the people in charge. And yes, it's public. You can find it. You can look at it.
Hi, thanks a lot. I've got a question about the foreigners registry, because in Germany connecting different registries is quite hard, but in this case the access of authorities to this registry seems to be quite easy. Do you know if the connection to other registries is also that easy, or because I see a huge danger in this? Do you know if they're also so easy going with this? Well, which other registries are you talking about? Or do you even need any other registries about foreigners in Germany if you have this huge collection of data in the Central Foreigners Registry? I don't know if you even need to make such connections. Maybe you just they just solve the problem by centralizing it. I would end the... So have a huge applause for Anna. Thank you for...